Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, and welcome to Your Family Dog. I'm Julie Fudge-Smith, and I'm here with Colleen Pilar and part two with Heidi Meinzer of legalities relating to your dog. Last time we talked about more general family liability, but today we want to talk about what do I do when I have that oh crap moment, my dog has done X. So our first hypothetical, many of us have seen, is what happens when I open the front door and for whatever reason my dog bursts through the door and attacks and severely injures or perhaps kills a dog who's passing by, a neighbor's dog. What kind of liability, what are we talking about here, Heidi, as far as what the owners are responsible for in this particular situation?
Well, three things come to mind anytime a scenario like this comes up. The first is the owner's responsibilities to animal control, just general stuff, because the main thing that comes up in animal control's mind when these types of things happen are rabies and public health, and we have to get that sorted out first. Before we go down dangerous dog road, civil liability road, we just have to make sure, especially with rabies, that things are okay. So I always tell folks, anytime you have any of the oh crap moments, cooperate with animal control. They are there to do a job primarily for public health and public safety. So make sure that your rabies is up to date. Make sure that you have the certificate ready to go to give to the animal control officer. Cooperate. They're not trying to be jerks. You know, they may, when it's a dog on dog, they might not quarantine the dog, or they might quarantine but let you keep the dog at home. There's usually something like a 10-day quarantine, even if the dog you can prove the rabies vaccination. So a lot of people kind of freak out at that moment of, oh my gosh, you're taking my dog. And it is literally really all about public safety, public health, rabies protection. So that's the number one first critical thing that happens. Number two is, of course, dangerous dog. Are they going to look to your dog to try to declare them dangerous? There is liability here in Virginia for that. Dog on dog, there's got to be at least a serious injury to a dog or cat for them to go down that route. And then there's the civil liability, money damages. And so, of course, as soon as it happens, you know, I encourage people to take responsibility right away. You may or may not be liable, frankly, for injuries to the dog, but it happened. I have seen, I think the best neighborly thing you can do is go up and just try everything you can do to make sure that everything gets taken care of as quickly and as possible. So, you know, get your dog somewhere safe and go out there and make sure that you can do everything you can do. Follow up with the vet. If you want to offer to pay the vet bills, I see nothing wrong with it. It ultimately helps quite a bit. And even if you're not legally responsible, it just may be the neighborly right thing to do. You know, that said, I've also seen the, you know, kind of BS type things where people are demanding money. But, you know, you know it when you see it. But make sure everybody's all right. Be neighborly. Be cooperative. Be cooperative with your animal control officers. The civil liability thing comes later, and that's just money. It's really the dangerous dog thing comes up critically right away, right then, right there. You have the right not to say certain things to animal control if you don't want to, but you do want to cooperate and be professional, be neighborly. May not want to talk totally about the incident itself if you witnessed it, just because you do have certain rights if you don't want to, but certainly still cooperate and be polite.
Well, one thing I want to say is about the rabies thing, is that's a really serious threat. I mean, basically, if you contract rabies, you don't live. There's only one, maybe two people who survived who actually come down with rabies. So it is a serious health risk and understandable why they would want to quarantine a dog, because it really is that just that dangerous. The other thing I want to ask you is, at what point do you want to contact an attorney in this process?
As early as possible. Right? As early. Because there are things, you know, there's a line to be drawn. I tell people, be cooperative. But like I said, there are things you might not want to say, and you in that moment, you don't know. I mean, you certainly don't want, while somebody's out there, you know, the dog's out there bleeding on the street, you want to take care of that first. You don't want to call your attorney before you take care of that situation. But, you know, you definitely want to contact somebody right away as soon as you can. And you can always, you know, I always invite people to throw me under the bus, you know, tell the here's the rabies certificate, blah, blah, blah. But my attorney said, you know, can you talk to her about other things and let me take the heat for that?
Well, all right. I'm calling you next, Heidi. Next time this happens.
Fingers crossed we never have to call you, but good to know. So really, your advice really is try to avoid discussing the incident as much as you can. Like, do all of the other things, like, are you okay, and what do we do from this point forward, but trying not to focus backwards,
right,
if possible.
Right. I would, because, you know, in the heat of the moment, you may or may not remember things, you may or may not have perceived things right, you're upset, and your words can be used against you, whether you say them to the neighbor, you say them to the animal control officer, that is evidence against you and your dog in a dangerous dog proceeding or in a civil liability proceeding. So
does that include things like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry?
Could, but I'm okay with that, because something bad happened, whether it's your fault or not. So I can handle the I'm so sorry, but the, oh my God, this is the third time this week, that's bad.
Okay. Yeah.
So, right.
And the other thing I wanted to just point out with this circumstance and the civil liability with a dog biting another dog is, you know, our dogs are still just considered property in the law. And it is an interesting discussion about civil liability. What am I really responsible for in that circumstance? And it's all over the map as far as what a court would do in civil liability and how much in damages you might be entitled to. You know, and a lot of people, understandably, when their dog is bitten, get upset about this. But some courts say, well, it's a, you know, $200 chihuahua, and that's all you get, even if you're spending $10,000 to try to save the dog's life. Some courts say, if the owner's willing to spend $10,000, that shows the value of the animal. Some courts have a cap, like Maryland has a cap of, I think, $7,500. So it's all over the map about what your actual civil liability exposure is. In dangerous dog cases here in Virginia, you can get restitution, which can include the vet bill. So even in a civil liability case where a judge might say $200, that's all you get in that dangerous dog proceeding, you may still be on the hook anyways for the vet bills. And like I said, it just may be the neighborly thing to do, frankly, under the circumstances.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So then it is very helpful. Very, very helpful. Okay, so my next question is we escalate this a little bit. I open the door and the dog rushes out, only this time it bites a person. Maybe it bites the mailman. Maybe it bites the UPS delivery. Maybe, heaven forbid, it should bite a child who's running past the front of your house. I don't know if the severity of the bite matters in this, but what do you do when your dog bites another person?
So it's the same kind of thing, obviously. Get your dog safe, go make sure everybody's all right, and then the same three things pop up. The initial animal control is worried about rabies and quarantine, and then dangerous dog, and then civil liability. And with the quarantine issue and rabies issue, it is more likely they're going to quarantine when a person is bitten. And that may include 10 days at the shelter or 10 days at your vet. Instead of at home, just depends on the jurisdiction. Different places do different things. And then on the dangerous dog angle, here in Virginia, it doesn't happen everywhere, but in Virginia, for instance, for dangerous dogs and a dog bites a dog or a cat, there's got to be serious physical injury to the dog or cat, at least. For a bite to the person, there was, as of before July 1, there was no prerequisite of any kind of injury, just a bite or attack on a person. They have since, as of this July 1, added that there at least has to be some injury, but it certainly doesn't need to be serious physical injury like to a dog or cat. So if the pretty much, I think most animal control officers are looking at is the skin broken, at least, before they're going to do a dangerous dog case. But even if, you know, just skin is broken and it's not that severe, you may still be looking at a dangerous dog case at that point. And then for civil liability, it really ramps up, because once a person is bitten, or God forbid, a child, like you said, then you get the kind of fuzzy damages that come up, pain and suffering and those types of things that is very hard to put a number on, and can be quite costly, and where you really need to make sure that you have a homeowner's insurance or renter's insurance that's going to cover you in this situation.
Right, right. Okay, so then the third case scenario is a little bit different. We still have a dog that is biting a person, but it could be an incident, for example, where the dog is fearful of strangers, hasn't bitten a stranger, but has redirected the aggression back to a family member. So there may be some family members that this dog bites and other family members that it doesn't. So now you have a dog with a bite history, but it's all within the family. That's kind of a tough scenario. What kind of liability are somebody looking at there should this be reported? Because if the bite has to be treated, at least I know in the state of Ohio that if a physician treats a dog bite, he must report the dog.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a family member, they've been bitten by their own dog, and it gets reported, this becomes very complicated. What do you recommend in a situation like that?
Right. And again, I look at it the same three ways. There may still be a quarantine. As far as it's interesting with dangerous dog, in Virginia, there is right in the definition of dangerous dog, if the dog bites the owner, they do not pursue dangerous dog cases, interestingly enough. So if it happens within the household, you know, because maybe you're trimming your dog's nails, who knows what. So they don't want to be bringing dangerous dog cases every time, especially when there was no prerequisite injury and the animal control officers had to go get summonses. So they wrote that out of the statute, interestingly enough. So you may not have the risk of dangerous dog, and you're not going to sue yourself. But here's the issue, the biggest issue I see, is the civil liability front in the future going forward. Here in Virginia, we in the civil liability side, we still have this one free bite, whatever that means. But that doesn't mean that you're off the hook until your dog bites a stranger. You are going to be liable if your dog has propensities to cause injury and you know about it. And so even if that dog is in your own house biting your own family members, I think you're going to fall into that the dog has propensities and you know, because it's probably only a matter of time gone unchecked where the dog may injure somebody else. So, and then you're right, Julie, that if it gets reported, animal control has it, a plaintiff's attorney is going to find it. Ultimately, if it's in animal control records, you still, there's going to be in the future, legal liability. It's going to point back to those incidents.
So who makes the decision on a dangerous dog ruling? So let's say, for example, the dog who's bitten a family member. The family member doesn't want to pursue anything, but they're not the owner. So it's, you know, the sister-in-law. She went to the doctor. She got medical treatment. The doctor had to report the bite. Animal control finds out. Animal control goes, well, that was a pretty bad bite. Your sister-in-law, you know, it was a bad bite. Sister-in-law is like, no. I don't want to make a big fuss. Does animal control make a ruling, or do they say, well, it's kind of still family?
Very good question. And again, it depends by jurisdiction. In Virginia, only an animal control officer can get a summons for. So a person, you know, a regular old citizen can't run to the magistrate and go get a dangerous dog summons. So it is up to the animal control to figure out what to do And they'll use their discretion. And sometimes if the person bitten says, I don't want to go forward, the animal trusser might go, okay, but you're right. If it's bad enough, they may feel like, I'm sorry, I have to do this. And you can understand, again, it's a public safety concern. So then maybe it gets worked out a little easier, or, you know, something happens if the person doesn't want to proceed. But, you know, animal control could still decide, I've got to go get a summons. Ultimately, in Virginia, it's up to the court to say if that dog is dangerous or not. So there's still going to be a prosecutor looking at the case. There's still going to be a judge ruling on it. So there's plenty of ways to try to get it worked out, even if animal control gets the summons. In other places like Maryland, basically animal control typically decides this dog is dangerous, and then you have to go fight it in an administrative proceeding to try to get that overturned. So it happens very differently in different jurisdictions. Mm-hmm.
So what happens if your dog has now been designated as a dangerous dog? What does that mean for most homeowners?
Again, lots and lots of variations state by state, even sometimes like Maryland, county by county. In Virginia, which is, and I won't necessarily say typical, but a lot of places have similar types of laws. Once a dog is deemed dangerous, there are certain conditions that automatically pop up. So the dog needs to be registered in the Dangerous Dog Registry, which you can find online. Then you have to have a certain amount of homeowner's insurance that will, or a bond that will cover liability in the future. The dog needs to be muzzled when the dog's off the property, properly confined when the dog's on the property. There can be some other conditions that attach as well. But those are some very typical conditions that will come up with a dangerous dog case. And then if the dog... if there's an incident again, the owner might actually even face criminal charges, and the dog, if found vicious, which is the next level of Virginia, once you're already dangerous and you do something else, then it's euthanasia is the only issue, the only resolution, basically, once the dog is deemed vicious.
So basically, when an owner's dog has been labeled as dangerous, if you do not take these precautions, but the problem is, of course, is that management is never 100%. So even if you are desperately trying to comply, should your dog have, I would imagine, even a minor incident, you are talking about some serious ramifications.
Yes.
And so once a dog is considered dangerous, then the owners have some very difficult decisions that they're going to have to take a look at. You know, how dangerous. Can a dog be declared vicious right at the beginning?
A great question. Oh, that is really good. So, and again, it's very different jurisdiction by jurisdiction. In Virginia, they can go straight to vicious if it's a bite to a person and the level of injury is severe. They can go straight to vicious. It's very rare that that would happen. There is a way to get straight to vicious. In the normal case, you're not looking at euthanasia for a dog who gets into an incident. And I have plenty of clients whose dogs were deemed dangerous and they are perfectly able to comply with, and the dog, you know, still gets, you know, plenty of enrichment and has plenty of a good life.
Mm-hmm.
And can live with those conditions for a dangerous dog. They're onerous, but they're not terrible. They've got a pretty decent balance for management and for public safety. But there's no doubt management isn't 100%. And you know, you can still argue if something very quirky happens that it wasn't an intentional act, and you should, you know, because there still has to be a level of intent to find somebody criminally liable. And there's still things you can argue. And most animal control officers are very understanding. You know, dog gets out with some, you know, by some crazy circumstance and wasn't muzzled and is back in the pen, back in the fence in 30 seconds. I mean, most animal dressers are going to be understanding and not be running to court right away for something like that. But, you know, that dog gets out and bites again, and that's going to be an issue. Yeah.
So my question is once a dog is labeled a dangerous dog, is this a dangerous dog for the rest of the dog's life, or is this something that can be rescinded?
Another really good question. Here in Virginia, it's dangerous and dangerous for life. And there's been some talk. I don't know if we'll get the law changed at some point, but a lot of animal control officers would like to see that changed, would like to see a way to ultimately work off the designation. And
community service, I'm thinking, you know, dog does community service, you know, it's really nice to cats, that kind of stuff.
And some jurisdictions have it, or sometimes in Virginia, we'll do some creative things in certain jurisdictions where for 2 years, if you live with most of the conditions and everything goes well, maybe they'll even set in a prerequisite of some training, or you pass the canine good citizen test or something like that, that ultimately the case will get dismissed. There are ways to build that in and be creative if you want. But under the law in Virginia, once declared dangerous, it's dangerous for life, unfortunately, at this point.
I have a question about quarantine. So when, you know, so the incident happened and I bring my dog back in the house and now I'm home waiting, terrified that the animal control is going to come. What are the things that a family could do to make the 10-day quarantine easier for the humans? And are there anything they can do to make it easier for the dog or for the dog upon returning home? What are your tips for quarantine?
For quarantine, a lot of times the quarantine is not as severe. Let's say your rabies has lapsed, or God forbid you didn't have rabies at all. Then it's like a 6-month quarantine and it is strict. Like the dog literally needs to be doubly confined and it is really, really onerous. I can't emphasize enough how much you need to make sure that your rabies vaccinations are up to date. But for the 10-day quarantine, when the dog does have a rabies already, you know, rabies vaccination already, and everything's fine, and they're just really making sure that everything's all right, it's usually not as strict. I mean, certainly it's not the double fence confinement and all the special things they do for a dog who's not vaccinated. But there's a lot you can do to enrich your dog during that 10-day period. And, you know, legally, they just want to minimize contact as much as possible with people and other dogs. But if there are other dogs in the household and the people who are in the household, I mean, they just don't want the dog running willy-nilly in the neighborhood and just want to make sure that contact is limited just in case. And some people argue this is very antiquated and why do we even do this anymore? Again, I get it. It is a huge public safety concern. So you just want to make sure that you are limiting exposure from the legal aspect of limiting exposure to other humans, limiting exposure to other dogs. Certainly don't let the dog play with any other neighbor dogs or anybody else at that point. Don't take the dog to doggy daycare for 10 days. Just, you know, enrich it home as much as you can. And, you know, if strangers are coming over, put your dog away, create them in another room. Just limit the exposure and respect that quarantine for those 10 days.
So are almost all quarantines home quarantines?
Most that I see are home quarantines. Occasionally, you know, if it's a bad bite to a human, most places are going to ask that the dog be quarantined at the shelter. I've also seen sometimes that they'd let you quarantine somewhere else, like your veterinarian's office. Sometimes they'll do that.
And will most veterinarians do that? I mean, like, is that a common thing that a veterinarian would allow?
I would think so, especially if they're the ones who vaccinated the dog and they know, you know, this is just a thing. Yeah, for the most part.
So if you, like, for example, my dog Zuzu has this propensity for losing her tags. I've spent an extraordinary amount of time retracing her tag history. So I have the piece of paper. In fact, she got vaccinated for rabies in Maryland. So I have the certificate from Maryland that says she was vaccinated, but I don't have her tag anymore. Is that an issue, or do I just need to be able to prove that she was vaccinated, or does she actually have to wear that little rabies tag?
In Virginia, it is the law that they have to wear their little tag. And I sat on a work group for about a year going over issues about licensing, and we were talking about these very types of things. And again, if the biggest thing is that you can produce that actual certificate. So if the dog has a tag, You don't. You only get the tag if the dog's already vaccinated. But no animal trusters typically going to take that as proof. Even if you have the tag on your dog, they're going to want to see that certificate or hear from the vet. So that it, you know, okay, maybe it's a $10 fine if your dog doesn't actually have the physical tag anymore on their collars. But it is a bigger issue to make sure you actually have that proof of vaccination.
And then, okay, say for example, you're terrible with your files. And it's a Friday afternoon when your dog has this incident, your vet won't open again until Monday. Is that like the animal control would understand and just say, we get it, you know, obviously just quarantine and we're going to assume, but first thing Monday morning, you're going to produce this, or is that a bigger issue?
Typically you're going to be all right, especially if there's some way that they can somehow verify, you know, first animal control is going to know if your license is up to date. And if the license is up to date, that yes, there's are some rabies certificates somewhere out there. So in those circumstances, typically they're going to be all right until Monday morning to see it. If there's no way to know, you know, you haven't gotten the dog license and you don't have that certificate, you know, at that point, maybe they're going to take your dog, and maybe Monday morning when you can produce the certificate, they may let you quarantine the rest of the time at home. But that may be a circumstance where maybe they would take the dog into the shelter to quarantine.
Okay. Well, Heidi, I think this has been a sad episode, but a really good one. Talking about all these terrible things that happened. But I think that the idea behind it is to understand that if there is an incident, there are three things you need to keep in mind. You need to get everybody safe. You need to get medical treatment if necessary. Then the next process would be, what's going to happen to my dog? How is this going to pan out with animal control? Is he going to be labeled a dangerous dog or whatever? And the third thing is civil liability, if there's going to be a civil suit. So get everybody safe. Make sure you don't say too much, because you might say something you really don't want to say. And contact an attorney sooner rather than later to help guide you through this whole process and to make it a lot easier, because you are counselors. You're trained to do this. You're trained to keep your head in situations where others cannot. So I think it's always handy to have, you know, an attorney sort of in your back pocket that you can call and say, look, we're having this kind of an incident. Is there anything else that you would want to say to owners who are facing an incident such as this, like we've discussed?
Yeah, I just, you know, again, stay as calm as you can. It will be all right. You know, it's going to be all right. Make sure everybody's okay. And just stay calm. Like you said, keep your head. It'll be all right.
Okay.
That's comforting to hear, because in that moment, it doesn't feel like it will be okay.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it doesn't. It doesn't at all, having been in a similar situation. So, Heidi, if someone would like to contact you for more information, especially if they live in Virginia, can you give us, once again, your contact information would be handy.
Sure. So I'm at the law office of Heidi Meinzer. I'm in Alexandria, Virginia. And the best way to find me is on my website, which is www.meinzerlaw.com. It's MEINZERLAW. And all my phone numbers and email and all that good stuff is right there on my website.
We're so grateful to you for coming on our show and sharing all this information, because it's stuff that we don't just naturally know. People, dog lovers, don't always know what to do, and it's important stuff. So very, very grateful that you took some time to share with us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.